Okay, we have just finished up the series on Martin Luther. I think we had a good movie that we watched to finish it up. I thought that was helpful. I hope you learn a lot from it. It's nice to do something a little different once in a while. And now we're going to start another new series. As you know, we try to go from the Old Testament to the New and back and forth. So we have a balanced look at the Bible. The last thing we did was Thessalonians. So we're heading back into the Old Testament again. And when I'm thinking ahead about what I want to do, I'm always arguing with myself. And sometimes I lose that argument. But I have to read a lot about what I'm going to talk about because I talk 2 hours a week, so I gotta always have my head in a book for sermons and lessons. But I do stash around the house books that I pick out that I really want to read. Hopefully, maybe it'll help me make future choices. So part of what I'm choosing here tonight is that, due to some things that I've been reading. Many years ago, long time ago now, I was an adult teacher, Sunday school teacher in another church, and we had a guest speaker. He came for the weekend. And he sat in my Sunday school class, and when the class was over, he got up and he said, "Because of what Eric said, I know what I'm going to talk about." I'd have thought he'd had that all planned before he got there. But apparently he changed his mind and he wanted to do something about what I said. And so I thought, well, that was nice of him. He didn't have to say that. And so I'm going to say, too, that several of you have commented to me about what I'm about to do. And so you've had some influence on me. I don't know how much. Don't ask me a percentage, but you've had influences on me asking me these questions that you sometimes ask, which takes us tonight to a study in the book of Leviticus. There you go. Leviticus, there's an exciting book for you. Hang on to your hat. It's the one that people get to this one to skip over. But I've been looking for something to sink my teeth into, of course, but a little more than that, because I think that one of the things that we need to work on, we all need to work on it, and the church as a whole needs to work on it too, is that we need to grow in the Lord, and we don't want to just reach a point and stop. That's not what we want to do. We don't want to say, well, I know everything I'm going to know, and here we are, and I'm just going to be like this for the rest of my life. I don't want to be that way. I want to learn more, and I want to develop a relationship with the Lord. That's what it's all about, my friends. It's about knowing God and getting to know Him and have a personal relationship with Him, talking to Him regularly, seeking His advice, finding out everything we can about Him, learning to do what He wants us to do. And it's very easy to reach a point and then kind of stop and not grow anymore. And so I'm thinking a lot about that lately, that we want to go on and keep pushing, keep growing, and not just stop. There's a lot of mediocrity in the Christian world today. Mediocrity is everywhere. People that go a little bit, learn a little bit, and then they kind of just stall. We don't want to do that. So this book is intended to push us a little bit, and that's why we skip over it probably, because it hurts. Whoa, wait a minute. But I find that this is going to be a good study for us along those lines, and I appreciate people that commented to me about it, because it means you're thinking along the right track too. So we begin this book of Leviticus with that in mind, that it might help us to accomplish growth in our Christian experiences so that we're not stunted and we're not mediocre. We need to go beyond that and get about the business that God wants us to do. And this will be a good book to help us. We will not do every single item in it. We'll stay in it for 10 weeks or so, something like that, lead us up to the summertime, and it'll help us if summer comes, that is. I've been thinking seriously about getting another Christmas tree. If we're gonna do this, man, oh man, why not? You know. So it's an urge that I'm beginning to feel. But anyway, it'll lead us for a while. So we can't do everything in it because that would take a long time. Some of the things we're gonna probably skip over or touch on lightly, but we're looking for the meaning behind what is obvious on the surface. And someone has said, and I agree, that Leviticus is like what the Gospels are to the New Testament, which is the beating heart of the New Testament. Leviticus is to the Old Testament, or that is, it has in it so much, and I'm just going to put here, we're going to put this on, try to do it every week. It's all about Jesus. It's all about Jesus. When God set out with a plan to send his son into the world, of course, there was nothing like it had ever happened before. It's the most unique thing that ever happened when God took a human form and walked among men. And so that we would understand it when it came, so we would grasp it, know what he was doing here. These things were done years and years and years, thousands of years beforehand, so that we'd have a picture in our mind. And when Jesus came, he said, oh, okay, I know what that is, and I know what he's doing. And we'd recognize him by the things that are in this book. Leviticus has to do with Levi. Levi was a tribe. You know, Abraham was God's friend. He had a son, Isaac, and a grandson, Jacob. Jacob had 12 sons and became the father of the nation of Israel. And one of those sons was named Levi. And from Levi's tribe came every priest and every Levite, that those people who would work in the temple, that you had to be in that family, had to be from the tribe of Levi. So Leviticus has to do with Levi's tribe or Levi's family, Levi's business, the family business, which is priesthood, working in the temple, doing God's work in the temple. And it's because of that, when they came into the promised land, they broke up the land into 11 pieces. And you say, well, there's 12 sons. Yes, there was. Levi didn't get any property. Now, they gave him a couple of cities here and there for their own, but he didn't give them property. And when the question comes up, why didn't Levi get property, tribe of Levi, they said, God said, because they will have no inheritance, I will be their inheritance. They will have no possessions, I will be their possession. And that's why I have a son named Levi. He says, you mean I'm not getting nothing? I said, no, that's not the intention. Yeah, he's got a tribe, doesn't he? So that's where the name comes from. So anyway, this book named after the Levites, the priests. You're going to get their work. We're going to see their work, how it's done. But everything that's done reflects back on Jesus. And we're going to point it out as we go through, so that once Jesus came and they saw what happened, they would say, okay, I get it. I understand it. And that's exactly what happened. Now, before Jesus was crucified, the entire temple was against him. But when you read in the book of Acts, after he was crucified and rose from the dead, then we read that many of the priests believed on him. Why? Because it all fit. Everything came together. I mean, he died at 3 o'clock in the afternoon of the evening sacrifice. The veil of the temple was rent. These guys were eyewitnesses of those things. And they saw so much in what they did that they had to believe. It just made sense. And so we're talking about the very things that God wanted done. Now, let's read a bit, and then we got to stop and think exactly what happened to begin this book. Because Leviticus stands alone. We've got Genesis and the story of human race, its fall into sin. God promises a redeemer. And then he picks individuals, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And that grows into a family. Family grows into a tribe. Tribe grows into a nation. Right, that nation goes down to Egypt and multiplies, comes out of Egypt in the book of Exodus as free men, over a million strong. So they've grown significantly in that time, and led by Moses out across the Red Sea. Levi, I believe, told you about that Sunday. We talked about the crossing of the Red Sea. They're blocked. And Pharaoh's army's got them trapped against the Red Sea in the mountains. And they figure we're done for. And then God opens the Red Sea and they cross. And Pharaoh's army runs in and drowns in the Red Sea. So it's amazing deliverance. Shortly thereafter, they will go a little ways into the desert and stop. And that's where we want to think. Now what happens? Leviticus chapter 1, verse 1. The Lord called unto Moses and spake unto him out of the tabernacle of the congregation. Now, that's what's so different about the book Leviticus. And there's a lot to think about here. Moses brings them out across the Red Sea, Mediterranean, the Red Sea's there. They cross the Red Sea on dry land, come out the other side, and they go a little ways into the desert, and there's a great big old mountain sticking right up out of the desert sand, a couple of them there, and it's different than our mountains. We got rolling hills that kind of lead up to the mountains. This is just flat desert and a mountain stuck there, Mount Sinai. And so they go to Mount Sinai, make a camp there. And it says that God came down on the top of Mount Sinai. And so on top of Sinai, there's fire, there's smoke, thunder, and lightning. It's really intense. And God says to Moses, once you come up into the smoke, we're going to talk. And so Moses gets ready to go up to meet God on Mount Sinai. And God says, before you come, you tell those people, don't touch that mountain. Don't touch that mountain. Stay away from the mountain. In other words, this is a very awe-inspiring thing that God is doing. And the mountain's got smoke and fire coming out of it. And Moses, invited by God, comes up on top of Mount Sinai, disappears into the cloud, and is up there for 40 days. That's a long time, all right? Seems like a long time. Seemed like eternity if you were waiting for him at the bottom. But it wasn't really long for Moses. And he goes up there and he gets two things. And it's a very fearful thing One of the things he gives, we call the Ten Commandments. In Exodus chapter 20, you know what they are. Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Honor thy father and thy mother. Keep the Sabbath holy. And he gets 10 rules that are moral laws. And it's a very serious thing. And they're carved in stone. And Moses goes to take them down. He gets to the bottom. The people are having an orgy. And he gets so mad, he smashes the stones. He takes the golden calf, grinds it into powder, pours it in the water, and makes them drink it. Man, he's hot. He is hot. And then he goes back up on the mountain. All right, and God says, well, we'll get you another set of 10 commandments. You smash the first one. I will make another set. We'll carve them in stone. And then, while you're up there too, Moses, I'm going to give you a set of instructions. Very specific set of blueprints. And you're going to come down off Sinai now, and you're going to build what's called the tabernacle. And so the tabernacle was a tent, and the tent had linen cloth on the sides, brass posts into the sand with posts there holding the linen in place. And on the east side, there's an opening, and they come in. And the first thing is an altar of sacrifice. And then there's a laver. It's a great big bowl of water. And so they come in. The first thing you hit is the altar. That's the first thing. And then there's a big curtain across. And there's called the holy place in the tabernacle. And priests and Levites were allowed to go in there. They had 3 functions in there. There's a table on one side with 12 loaves of bread on it. And those 12 loaves of bread represent 12 tribes of Israel. There's a candlestick on the other side with oil flowing into it. And so the priest would go in and change the table, they call it showbread, change the table with fresh bread, make sure the lamp was full of oil, and then right up next to the curtains, a little altar where they burned incense. And so remember what I said? It's all about Jesus. He got an altar for sacrifice. He had a cross. You come into the table of showbread with his 12 loaves. Jesus said what? I am the bread of life. Over here is the light, the candle. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. All right, and then you have a an altar for incense. That is prayers. As we burn the incense, smoke goes up to God. All right, and so those are the 3 things that are there. And beyond that is a holy of holy, and a place called the Holy of Holies, and the Ark of the Covenant is in there. Now, if you never heard of that, at least you heard of it by Indiana Jones, right? Yeah. Indiana Jones is supposed to go find the Ark of the Covenant. Amazing he could find it, nobody else can. But the Ark of the Covenant was a box. It was a wooden box. It had rings, brass rings on the side. And they had long poles that went through the rings on either side. And it was covered with gold. So it's a wooden box, but it's all covered with gold. And then it's got a cover on the box. Inside is the Ten Commandments, the stones of the Ten Commandments, carved on stone. There's Aaron's rod in there. I'll explain that some other time. And there's some manna in there. Manna only lasted for one day, but they put it in there and it lasted for years and years and years. The stones are the Ten Commandments. The rules are said, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. All right? And those were the rules of the Ten Commandments. And so shutting that mouth that was speaking against us, thou shalt not, and you did, thou shalt not, and you did, was the cover of the Ark of the Covenant. On top of the cover, there are two angels made of gold facing each other with their wings touching up in the center. So there's a couple angels facing towards each other of gold, and their wings touch. And the cover of the Ark is called the Mercy Seat. Mercy Seat. And so what you have is the Ten Commandments, the laws, the rules, thou shalt not, are in the box. They're speaking all the time. Thou shalt not, and you did anyway. Thou shalt not, and you did anyway. So we put a cover over that to quiet that voice down so we can't hear that voice, and it's called the Mercy Seat. All right, so mercy shuts that voice up that's calling us guilty, and it covers that seat. Now, what happened, they built the tabernacle. It's a tent. It's all made of skins and linen and fancy embroideries and so forth on the inside. Badger hides, all kinds of things, and put this together into a tent. This part is all enclosed, but this rest of it's all open. And so the Ark of the Covenant goes in the Holy of Holies. So, we read the first verse of Leviticus. God spoke to Moses from the holy place, from the ark. So we have a very drastic change from Exodus to Leviticus. All right, what happened is, once this was finished, they put the ark inside of the Holy of Holies. Nobody can go in there. Only the high priest once a year, all right? But the ark is in there, inside that Holy of Holies, and God comes down, and he goes into the Holy of Holies, and he takes up residence on the seat as light. He's in the form of light. So on this mercy seat inside the Holy of Holies, and it's a 15 by 15 by 15 room, and in it is the Ark of the Covenant, and God has a presence of light, and that light goes in and rests on top of the mercy seat. Okay? And so you say, well, where's God? Well, God's everywhere, right? He's everywhere. And he can be whatever he wants to be, wherever he needs to be. And so he himself enters that Holy of Holies behind the veil, the one that would eventually be torn when Christ was crucified. And he's has a presence there of light. It's so intense that they can't just walk in there when he's in there. And so they speak. Moses is outside here. He's outside the curtain, and God is in here on the Ark of the Covenant, and they're having a conversation. Now, let's stop and think about the difference. All right. Mount Sinai, fire and smoke. Don't anybody come near here. It's a very fearful presence. There's thunder and lightning, and Moses disappears into that cloud up there, and everybody's scared to death. You better be scared to death, because God's telling you this is wrong and don't do it. All right, it's meant to be a very fearful presence. Now, he's on the ark, sitting on the mercy seat, talking to Moses through the curtain. Whole different attitude. He was way up there on top of that mountain. Don't you even think about going up there. Now he's right here with us. He's come down. He's talking to us. And he's talking to us from the mercy seat. So his attitude of judgment on top of Sinai, judgment and thunder and lightning, God says, I'm going to give you a moral standard. You better behave. Now he comes to the mercy seat. He's right down here with us. He's right there. He's talking to Moses through the curtain. whole attitude has changed. Now God has become easy to be with, instructive, helpful, or merciful. So the change is God from way up top of that Mount Sinai. Now he's coming. He's right here with us down here. Now, all about Jesus, right? Look over at John chapter 1. John's Gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John chapter 1. Famous passage written by John the Apostle, the disciple of Christ, as he tries to explain who Jesus was. He says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God." So we have Jesus Christ is the Word, and he says he's with God, he is God. He was ever there from all times back far in the beginning. He was there all at all times. He's God himself. And all things were made by him. Without him, not anything was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. So here's a powerful God existing from eternity, spinning worlds off his creative fingertips. And then we get verse 14. "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." So the Word, actually, where it says the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, what John actually wrote was the Word, Jesus Christ, became human flesh, took up a human form, and John said he tabernacled among us. So God was in heaven, far away, seemed like he was too far away to have and be close to, and all of a sudden he's right down here with us, just like in the tabernacle, all right? And so John said he actually tabernacled, Jesus came and tabernacled or dwelt with us. And so Jesus crosses that bridge and comes down, walks among us, and gives us mercy and speaks to us close by like he did to Moses. Remember, it's all about Jesus. And so we get Exodus. He's on the mountain with fire and smoke, fearful presence. All of a sudden in Leviticus, he's right here. He's talking to us. He's right with us. And Moses is on the other side of that curtain. He's explaining things to him to write down. All right. So it's a drastic change when we get to Leviticus. It's one that people miss because it sounds, you just read it, don't realize what happened. Right? So we went from the smoke and fire of Sinai. Now he's among us, seated on the mercy seat, talking to us. God came down to us. He's down with us. All right, now he's down with us. So God came down. Our job, now that he's near, is to approach God. And so we're going to get in the book of Leviticus religious exercises, religious activity, things that you do that would be considered religious. All right. I don't even like to use the word sometimes. Religion is us men approach God. God came down to us. He's made himself available to us. Now we're going to approach him. We're going to come near to him. And that's what religion is all about. And anybody tells you any different is uninformed. All right? People say, "Ah, it's just a religious thing." Be careful what you say. The true idea of having religion is we're going to approach God and think about God, and how do we approach him? How do you come to somebody like God? What do you do? How do you approach him? What do you say? This, I think, we desperately need. We need to find a way to talk to God and to approach him in the way that he wants to be approached. There's a lot of offhanded comments made nowadays about, you know, I said this to God and I said that. Don't forget, he came from the fire and smoke on Sinai. And you didn't mess with him then. You touched the mountain, you died. All right? Now, he's come down to us and he's sitting on a mercy seat so he can talk to us. And now he's invited us to come. All right? He's still not someone to be trifled with. He's someone to be thoughtful when we approach him. And so, what are they going to do? How do they do this? Well, he says, I'll give you some instructions. This is how you can come to me, how you can approach me. And the book of Leviticus is full of these kind of instructions. And you say, well, we can't do that. Well, let's think about it. I think if we get into it, we'll see that behind the outside thing, which is, in these cases, a sacrifice of animals, is a very important, meaningful description of how you and I should approach God. And so we have here instructions from a kinder, gentler God who's inviting us to come. Let's come and let's talk together, and let's you can approach me, and here's how I want you to do it. Here we go. Now, verse 2. See, here we got so far, I only got verse 1. The Lord called unto Moses, spake to him out of the tabernacle of the congregation, a very different thing than has happened so far, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, if any man of you bring an offering unto the Lord, you shall bring your offering of the cattle, even of the herd and of the flock. If his offering be a burnt sacrifice of the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. All right, and so he starts with a cow, some kind of a cow. Remember the herd? We put a cow down, the bull. It's a bull. It's got to be a male, okay? Why has it got to be a male? It's all about Jesus, right? So he said, we will bring a male, just so you know, when he comes, who's coming. So you always bring a male, all right? And he's always going to be, let him offer a male without blemish, all right? So it has to be a bull. If you're going to do a bovine, it's going to be a bull, and he's got to be perfect. Got to be perfect. He can't have a twisted leg. He can't have his ear lopped off. He can't be anything wrong with him. He's got to be a perfect animal when you bring him. Always got to be perfect. It's all about Jesus, right? Jesus was the perfect human. And so we're trying to teach people. Those priests would come and look at that sheep, that lamb you brought, look it over real good. That's a perfect lamb, no flaws in it. We can sacrifice it. Of course, when Jesus comes, he's the perfect Lamb of God. All right? So they bring the bull for a sacrifice, a burnt offering. He shall offer it of his own voluntary will at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation before the Lord. And so here, now we're starting to get in trouble. Your free will. We're already in trouble so far. We're right up to here. We're right up to there. We got into verse 2 and we got into trouble up to here. We're already in trouble. Now he says to help us think a little harder. It's going to be your choice. You're going to make a free will decision. It has to be your choice. I'm going to make a statement that has to do with that. Everybody has as much of God as they want. Everybody has as much of God as they want. Now, maybe not as much as you wish you had, but everybody has as much of God as they want. Did anybody ever go to God and get refused? No. As a matter of fact, he says, him that cometh to me, I will in no wise cast out. So you can go and get as all of God you want. So however much you have now is as much as you want. All right? Now that's kind of a condemning note. How much of God do you have? Well, you got as much as you want. Because you can go and get all you want. Keep going and going. That's what we talked about in the beginning. We want to learn to grow more so we have more of God. So we got to do certain things. And one of them, you got to want it. If you don't want it, then you'll never have it. But you want as much of God as you can get, all right? Then now we're on the right path. Verse 4, he put his hand on the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be accepted to him to make atonement for him. And so you bring the bull in, and you put your hands on his head. It's got a couple of purposes. You are going to release your hands from it. All right, so you're going to take, this is my bull. I got my hands on the bull's head. I'm going to release my hands from it. It's not mine anymore. I think the most important thing is that when I pull my hands away from the bull, I just gave what? It's a gift to God. So, first instruction, out of the mouth of God, from behind the curtain, as he's sitting on the mercy seat, I want to teach you how to come to me. Come with a gift. Bring a gift to me. I want you to come with a gift. I told you, we're in hot water right up to here already. The modern attitude is we come to take from God. We come to church to take from him. So we want to be blessed. We want to have what he has, but we just come to take. We come and sit in church to take. And God says, when you approach me, come to give me something. And it is the modern way, and sometimes it gets really, the only word I can think of is gross. It's a gross thing. I turn on a TV, I don't do it now because it makes me mad, so I just don't do it. But turn on the TVs and these guys are saying, come here and we're going to ask God to make us perfectly healthy, so there's nothing ever wrong with us again. We're going to make God fill our pockets, so we're full of money, so we're very wealthy, all right? So we're going to be healthy and wealthy, and we're going to say, I want to be blessed. So here we are, God, we're here, fill our pockets, make us perfectly healthy. Here we are, start giving. I'm here to take, start giving. And God said, in his first instruction on religion, on how to approach me, says, bring a gift to me. Bring it to me. And we got it backwards right away. Right away, we come to church, sit here, say, I come here to take. I want something from God. I want to be blessed. And actually, our attitudes, a lot of times, I think, are greedy, selfish,
And that's a bad way to approach God.
I've had people say to me, I'm here because I want things from God. And I'm coming to come and get those things. Well, I'm not sure that that's quite what it's about. Yes, God wants to do things for us. I'm not arguing that. But when we come, just saying, give me, I want you to give me more and give me more and give me more. That's not, it's the opposite of what he says here. And I think what happens is we come and we come expecting to give, to take, not to give. We come expecting to take. And as we take, then we're unhappy if it's not like we thought it'd be. Well, that sermon didn't give me anything. That song didn't do a thing for me. And when we come to take from God all the time, pretty soon you're going to be complainers by nature. They turn into complainers, right? I've had people say to me, it's too cold in church. If it's cold like this again, I'm never coming back. I never answer that. It's always too hot for me. It's too dark in here. I can't see. I heard that. Choir sings too loud. We didn't like the song. We didn't like the sermon. Why? Because we come just to take and to take and to take. And God says, if you're going to approach me, what are you bringing? What are you bringing? You're going to bring something to me. Right. So, what are you bringing? So I think right away, we're in trouble. As soon as we start this, God's instructing us, here's how you approach me. You bring something to me. Now, they're bringing a whole bull. It's a pretty significant gift that they're bringing. They're taking, they're putting their hands on it. This is mine. I take my hands off it, and I'm giving it to you. Now, we want to have more of God in our lives. He says, all you do is come and ask. And I always say, we always got our hand out to God. We can't help it. It's who our nature is, because we're weak and we need his help. But there's a token. What kind of gift do we give? You say, well, I can't bring a bull in church. That's true enough. Right? But there are tokens. There's a token of our homage. I like that word. That we bring something out of respect to God, and sometimes that is just plain respect. We should bring respect to God. We should bow to his greatness. And in our hearts and in our minds, be thinking about that. That's the kind of gift we give. And so, when the choir is singing, "How Great Thou Art," you'd be nodding your head. Yeah, that's right. That's true. I'm here because you are great. I've come here and I want to offer you something. The gift I have is what I can say. You're great. You're wonderful. You're magnificent. And that can be the gift that we give, that acknowledgement. All right, a token can be a token of gratitude. Gratitude should be a regular part of our approach to God. We should be thankful regularly when we come to him. You thank him. Every time my car starts, I thank him. I do. Because I had cars that didn't start for a long time. And that wouldn't start. And I was on the side of the road trying to figure out why it didn't start. And now when that car starts, I'm thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You ought to say thank you to God regularly. You ought to come to church focusing on his generosity. And that's a gift that you can give. So we're going to come and I'm going to say thank you to God when I get here I'm going to say thank you to God. I'm going to say it anywhere I am, but I'm going to say it when I get here. That's going to be my gift. I'm going to thank him for what? For the people sitting around me, and for the people singing on the platform, and for the teachers down in the basement teaching, and for the kids in that house. I'm going to say thank you, and I'm going to say thank you, thank you. And have a regular time where I'm going to thank God for what he does. And then we bring things also as a token of our sorrow for sin. Sometimes we have to come here and we need to say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I'm sorry what I did. I'm sorry that I did that. And that's a token of a gift we give to God. He'd like to hear us say sometimes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I offended you. I'm sorry I ignored you. I'm sorry I did this. And so we're talking about the gifts that we're going to give to God. And he says, well, I expect you to come with a gift. Well, we can't bring a bull. All right, you can't bring a bull. But we can bring these tokens, and our mouth to speak those things. One of the saddest times I remember was on Thanksgiving Day. I've been preaching about Thanksgiving for 2 or 3 weeks. We had a service here, and I said, who wants to be thankful? I got 3 people said something. I felt awful. I said, I must have failed because I only got 3 people to say thank you. And it's Thanksgiving. You know? And those are the gifts that we come to give God. Now, some of you can sing. I mean, not everybody that can sing is in the choir. Some of you can sing down in the pews. You ought to be singing. If you can sing, you ought to be singing. Don't be sitting there with your mouth shut when it's time to come here. You ought to be singing to give God praise, all right? As we sing, praise is his gracious choice. God said, I'd like you to give me something. I don't got much to give. I'll take that. You come and say thank you to me and praise me. And show your gratitude. That's a gift that we can give. Now, take a look at this. Romans chapter 12. Verse 1. Romans 12, verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And so when you come and you want to give something to God, you say to him, here I am. I'm here. I'm willing to do something for you. I don't know what it is. I'm willing to play a part. I want to do something for you. And so I give you myself. Now, you may not know where that's going to take you, right? I told him that before I knew it would bring me here. And I think if I had known, I might have said, well, I got to think about that. Oh God, I want you to, I'm here. I give myself to you and you work it out. It's my reasonable response. He said, don't come empty handed. You come with a gift. What have I got? I got my own self. I got my heart. I give you my heart. Right? Take my life. Let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. Take my intellect and use every power as thou shalt choose. Take my love, my Lord, I pour at thy feet its treasure store. Take myself, and I will be ever only all for thee. Ever only all for thee. And so, back in Leviticus, he's saying, when you come to me, you come to approach me, you got something with you. You bring that gift and you put your hands on that bowl and you take your hands off and you say, it's yours, not mine anymore. Then what do you do with it? Down in Leviticus 1, verse 5, he shall kill the bullock before the Lord and the priest. That means you did it. Priest didn't kill a bull, you did. All right, so you had a knife. And the priest would stand by with a big bowl, and you'd slit the throat of the bull, and the priest would catch the blood until it was dead. You did it. Why do you think that was? Personal responsibility. Because you, when you put your hand on a bull, you're also, all right, you have a sorrow for sin. And so you're making a transfer. I'm going to transfer my sin onto that sacrifice. I put my hands on there and say, I'm sorry for what I did. And I transfer my sins onto that sacrifice. He's a substitute for me. So he's going to suffer for me. And he's going to die for me. And you're going to get a real good picture because you're going to slit his throat. What does it mean to suffer and die? Well, you're going to kill that bull. All right? So you're going to be the one that you feel it. All right? So you take that, you give God that bull. Pull your hands off it. Put your hands on it. I'm going to transfer my guilt onto the bull. Of course, it's exactly what we do with Jesus. We transfer our suffering. We transfer our guilt. And then we transfer our death onto Jesus. All right? So it's a very intense moment here. It's a very intense moment, and Paul said, that's your reasonable service. Why would that be reasonable? What did he not give you? He gave you every drop of blood he had, every bit of life he had until he was dead. He gave it to you and to me. And so it's only reasonable that we should give back to him, all right? And so we transfer on to the animal. All right. Then, verse 5, he shall kill the bullock before the Lord. Priests and Aaron's sons shall bring the blood, sprinkle the blood around about the altar as by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. He shall flay the burnt offering, cut it into its pieces. The sons of Aaron, the priest, shall put fire on the altar, lay the wood in order on the fire. And the priest Aaron's son shall lay the parts, the head, the fat, in order on the wood, so that his fire which is upon the altar, his inwards and legs shall he wash with water. Nothing dirty goes on the altar. So when they're killing the animal, they're gutting it, all right? And they slice it. So his hind legs sliced off, hind legs, front legs sliced off. And they take it and wash it all. So it's clean. And we lay it on that fire and going to burn the whole thing. 9. But his inwards and his legs shall he wash in water, and the priest shall burn all on the altar to be a burnt sacrifice, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto the Lord. And so that smell goes up to God. What's the smell? What's in the smell? Well, it's my willingness to give myself to God, my willingness to transfer my guilt and shame and sin over onto the animal and ask God to accept it. And then he burned the whole thing. You don't get any of it. He burned the entire thing until it was gone. Burned to a crisp, all gone. There's a hot flame on that altar going to burn everything. And you said, it's yours, God, and you give him the whole thing. All goes to God. None of it goes to the priest or anything. All right, so it all goes to God. It's a complete sacrifice. And so we come, instead of coming saying, what do you got for me today, God? He comes and say, here's what I got for you. I come to give you something, give you praise. I come to give you honor. I want to honor your name. I want to tell people stand up in the service and tell people what God has done for me. I want to honor your name. I want to tell people what God showed me in the Bible this week. I'll do anything and explain to you so that I know I'm giving something to God. It's very much for me that. When I come here, there's a part of Handel's Messiah. I've listened to it 1,000 times, and I still listen to it all the time. It's a song called "He Shall Purify." He shall purify the sons of Levi, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. When I'm preaching, it's an offering. And if I'm right in my heart, that's my gift to God. My heart is right, that's what I want to be. So my offering to God is my sermon. I'm going to offer it in righteousness. That is, I'm going to be right with God, in perfect harmony with God, and get up, here's my gift, and give my gift. All right? I got something to give. You say, well, I don't get up and preach. There's plenty you can do to have a part in giving to God. You give something to God. So right away, the first thing we have is bring a bowl. But what if you don't have a bowl? Not everybody had a bowl. Verse 10. If his offering be of the flocks, namely of the sheep or the goats, for a burnt offering, to bring a male without blemish, kill it on the side of the altar northward before the Lord, and the priest, Aaron's sons, shall sprinkle his blood round about the altar. All right. And he's going to do the same thing. He's going to cut it up and burn it. All right. It's a smaller sacrifice. Right? Not everybody's got a bull. So we're going to bring a little lamb, a little goat. What's that going to be? Well, my sacrifice isn't that big, but I'm going to bring what I got. And God says, that's good. That's just as good as a bull. I'll take that. As long as your heart is right, you can put your hands on that little lamb. Pull your hands off and say, here you go, God. See, I don't have a big thing to give God. You got something to give God. Now, here's the thrilling part. Verse 14. If the burnt sacrifice for his offering to the Lord be of fowls, he shall bring his offering of turtle doves or of young pigeons. So, you're so poor, you don't have a lamb. So you get a young pigeon. And pigeons are a dime a dozen. Literally. All right, back that time, literally. The smallest thing, coin you have, will buy you a pigeon. So you're a dime a dozen. And so you take the pigeon in. Now, you'd think, well, it's just a pigeon. It's not special. No, 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 no. You totally misunderstand God if you say that. So you say, well, what am I going to give? I don't have anything to give. You got something to give. It's the little pigeon. I want to show you God's opinion of that pigeon. This is pretty fascinating. It'd be easy to miss this. 14, if the burnt sacrifice for his offering to the Lord be of fowls, then he shall bring his offering of turtle doves or young pigeons. The priest shall bring it unto the altar and wring off his head, burn it on the altar, and the blood thereof shall be wrung out on the side of the altar. Shall pluck away the crop with his feathers, cast it beside the altar on the east part by the place by the ashes, cleave it with the wings thereof, but not divide it asunder. Priest shall burn it on the altar, and wood that is on the fire is a burnt sacrifice offering made of. Did you see the difference? There's a very striking difference. Did you notice the difference? You bring a pigeon because that's all you got. You don't have a big gift to give. All right, now let's take it to its logical conclusion. You don't have a sermon to preach. You don't have that. What do you got? I got something I can give. It's a small thing. No, it's not. It's not small. Now, let's go in our minds to Jesus Tuesday in the temple, 3 days before he dies. Let's go in our minds back to that. Jesus is standing on the stairs looking down across where they give their offerings. And they've got these bell-shaped baskets, and these rich people come with a bag full of chains and drop it in. You can hear it jingling down. And Jesus sees a little lady quietly come. She's got 2 pennies. And she drops them in. Nobody even notices and goes away. And Jesus says, look, Jesus, did you see that? Did you see that? They said, see what? See that widow lady? She took 2 pennies and put it in. That was her food for today. And she gave everything she had. She put those 2 pennies in. I want you to see, Jesus said, that she gave more than everybody else put together. She gave all she had. Now that became, the littlest thing was the biggest thing that day that happened. So you bring that little pigeon into the temple and you say, I don't have a bull. I don't even have a sheep. I got nothing. I got this little pigeon. And God says, we're going to treat this different. This gets different treatment. Now when you brought the bull, you took the knife and you slit the bull's neck. When you bought the sheep, you did the same thing. You took the knife. When you bring the pigeon, you don't kill the pigeon. You give it to the priest. And the priest takes the pigeon because he has to handle it himself. It's such a special offering. He'll do it all himself. And it becomes the responsibility of the priest to magnify the pigeon sacrifice over the sheep and the bull. And so he takes the little tiny pigeon and he says, I will sacrifice this personally for you. And he takes it over and wrings his head off and guts it and throws it in the ashes and cracks open the bones without breaking them. And lays that pigeon on the altar and burns it. Because it is to be treated extra special care. Because it represents the smallest gift. But it very likely came from empty-pocketed people who had nothing else to give, but said, I am not going to the temple without something to give. And they took 1 penny and bought a pigeon. And God said, you got the right idea. You got the right idea. So I'm going to magnify your gift above that big old bull. Matter of fact, that bull, they had to kill him out here. They just brought him inside and they killed him out here, just inside the fence. The sheep, he came up over here. All right. You took the pigeon right here. If you were noticing, it's hard to follow when we're reading. The bull was brought inside the enclosure. He's killed there. Sheep is on one side of the altar. But the bird is taken right up where they empty the ashes over here. And the guts are thrown in the ash pile. And then the priest himself kills a bird and lays it on there because God will magnify the smallest gift. Now, you say to me, what have I got to give God? You got a pigeon? You got a pigeon? You got some small thing that costs you nothing. You say it's not even worth anything. You give it to God and he will say, that's what I want. That's what I want. So don't ever say to me, I got nothing for God. Yes, you do. I don't know what it is. I've seen examples of this, and I got to quit. Wow. Didn't realize how long I've been talking. I've seen examples of this a little lady named Hazel Howard used to come here, and she could hardly walk. This leg didn't work really, and she walked like that. Her speech was slurred. Some of you who still remember her, her speech was slurred. She was a tiny little frail thing. She wanted to come and work while we were fixing this place. It was tough work. I want to come and work. And the only thing she could do, well, she couldn't really do anything. But I asked her, think you can clean the refrigerator? I can clean the refrigerator. I would love to clean the refrigerator. She came and cleaned the refrigerator. And, you know, that wasn't a big deal. Yes, it was. God looked down and he saw Hazel cleaning the refrigerator. That's the kind of gift that he's magnifying. He's going to show off. That's the pigeon, right? Her gift to this church was prayer. She helped pray this place into existence. You see, she got nothing to give. She could hardly walk and barely talk. She prayed for me, for years before this ever happened. Prayed for me every time I drove by her house. I didn't know it for years. And she said, I see you go by at 7:30 in the morning. I'm out drinking my coffee. And every time you go by, I pray. And I make sure I'm out there when you go by at 5:30. I pray for you again. And twice a day for years and years and years, she prayed for me when I drove by her house. And I was caught in a blizzard down the swamp. You heard me tell the story. And the car broke down. I ran up to the nearest phone, half a mile down the road, went back. And she said, when you have your church, I'm going to be in. I said, I'm not going to have a church. She said, when you have it, I'll be there. See, so that little offering that looked like nothing was magnified by God into something great. So we are to come with something in our hand for God. Not to come empty-handed saying, take, I want to take it, take it, take. He said, you come to me, you want to approach me, what are you going to give? What have you got to give to God? Well, I think the book of Leviticus started out with a bang. Along the lines, what do we want? We want to approach God. We want to have a relationship with God. There's better instruction than almost anywhere in the Bible on how to get that done. Leviticus chapter 1. What do you think we'll find in 2? Thank you.